Like I said last week, we skip the sermon, and now we're going right back to it. So, we're in Luke this morning, Luke 19, 1 through 9. It's a story we're all familiar with, one that we learned a lot as kids. So I really like this one. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He is gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus, he stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now, I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Most of us know Zacchaeus from our Sunday school days, from the little song, "Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he." Taylor reminded me of that when I was telling her about this sermon. I always liked that song. But today we're going to look at his story and his transformation. There's this switch was flipped all of a sudden. The story, it's unique to Luke's gospel. But the way of this personal transformation, sort of the gist of the story, is evident in all the gospels. It's evident in his living encounter with Jesus. It illustrates the transforming effects of that encounter, and perhaps we can learn something from this using our own understanding of transformation. Some of the things we've looked at the last few weeks, we can see it here as well. See, Zacchaeus, he was a very unlikely candidate for spiritual transformation. But perhaps that's the reason for Luke putting this story in here. You see, Jesus, he was making his way to Jericho. And Luke, he simply introduces Zacchaeus by saying, "There he was. There was a man named Zacchaeus. Here he is." When we read this in our English translations, it's just a name. Just Zacchaeus, that's his name. Let me move on. But if we look back to the Hebrew root for the word, Zacchaeus, it means pure or acquitted one. So Luke, he's really stoking the irony here when he adds, he is the chief tax collector of the region. He was pure by his name, which was huge in the Hebrew world, your name and everything. But he's also the chief tax collector, which they consider to be the most unpure, the biggest sinner around. So Luke, he's telling us about Zacchaeus, how he's the chief tax collector. Now, tax collectors, they were local Jews, so they were Jewish people in this area. They weren't Romans. They weren't anybody else. They were Jews here. They were hired by the cities and towns to collect taxes for the Romans. Now, Zacchaeus, he was the chief tax collector, which meant he had supervision over a region and over a number of tax collectors. So Luke, he added later, he said, and he was rich. Which again, we read over that, of course he's rich. But that was super important by the Jewish people in the day. This privilege of collecting these taxes, especially being the chief tax collector, was offered at a steep price. And these tax collectors often set, quotes, higher than what was mandated by the Romans, putting a lot extra in their pockets before they gave the Romans what they were owed. These tax collectors, they didn't really have much authority over anything. They weren't like police officers or guards or anything. They couldn't go to your house and say, "I'm taking this." They couldn't take your money. They couldn't take your property. What they could do is report you to the Romans. And the Romans didn't investigate it. They didn't say, "Well, let's look at this and see if that's true or if that's a fake charge." They just go in and do it. So these tax collectors, they were very corrupt. Very corrupt at this time. And the mere mention of their name or the name tax collector, instantly, they're sinners. That's the end of it. If you said, "Hey, I'm Austin, I'm a tax collector," no one liked you. That's just the way it was. So here Luke, he presents this almost a villain who is ironically named Pure. And like I've been saying, the Jews, they didn't see this as pure. That was a weird name for him. He was the opposite. But this sinner is soon to be found in a seeking mode. How and when he heard about Jesus, it doesn't say. What kind of report sparked his desire to see Jesus? We don't know what he was told. But what we see is sort of a funny picture, something we can tell children with a song and they remember. Zacchaeus, he was obviously well known in the area by his reputation. His position and wealth would place him near the highest rung of societal status in Jericho. But this big man in society was lacking in his physical stature. He was often looked down at people from where he sat, up on his big house, probably up on a big hill. He looked down on everybody. But when Jesus came, he couldn't see over the crowd. He was all of a sudden at the bottom. Although left unstated, I can't help but conclude there was some desperate spiritual need, some kind of pull, some kind of urge, as I talked about last week, to see this man, to make Zacchaeus climb up in a tree like a child, just to see Jesus. Luke keeps putting these little irony statements in here, keeps adding on. Jesus stops. He stops under this tree. He looks up and he calls Zacchaeus down. So everybody looks at what's happening here. Now this is a great potential for what we call a prophetic rebuke. This is what the crowd expected. They expected Jesus to say, "You're awful. You need to repent. You're the worst. Let's fix you." But instead, that's not what happened. Jesus didn't make him feel bad. He didn't humiliate him, especially since he was up in a tree. It could have been super easy. But instead, Jesus, he honors him by calling him by his name and declaring his intent to be a guest at his house. For all that we know about Zacchaeus and his encounter with Jesus, there is still something small missing from the story, some kind of a transition, I guess. It goes from, "Hey, I'm going to stay at your house," to everybody saying, "Look, that's a sinner. Why is he staying there?" All of a sudden, a slight switch was flipped. Zacchaeus was transformed. All of a sudden, he stopped and said, "I will give half of my wealth to the poor. And if I've cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much." Somehow, we don't know if he had already met Jesus, was already talking to him at the house when he said this, or said it out in the streets right then. But this taker was transformed to a giver. This greedy cheater of a man who defrauded people his whole life was transformed to a man with a just heart, with a fair heart. He even goes back to what the law says about cheating other people when he commits to making resolutions for his past sins. When he says, "I will give back four times as much," that's old Hebrew law he was pulling out of there. Nothing can account for this dramatic change except for the transforming power of the grace of God in through Jesus. At this moment, don't know what happened. Don't know what Jesus said to him. Don't know when it happened. All of a sudden, he's transformed. As I said earlier, the irony of the story, there's plenty of it. How he's pure, how he's transformed, how a sinner is invited by Jesus. But I really want to focus on two things this morning. First of which is the transformation always begins with the call of Christ in our lives. We Westlands believe that God, he comes looking for us. God, he knows us and calls us by name. Like Zacchaeus, we may be up in a tree, but Jesus sees us. We call that prevenient grace. I've been talking a little about Wesley's ideas of grace here recently. And here it is again, this prevenient grace. This transformation came to Zacchaeus when he became like a child and climbed that tree. It was the hidden call of Christ in his heart that compelled him to climb the tree in the first place. He was seeking Jesus, and all the while, Jesus was seeking him. He knows who we are, and he wants to share fellowship with us, even though we are sinners. In this fellowship, we can find this transformation. And that's sort of the power of the symbol of baptism we have. Baptism is an acknowledgement of the power of God, the call of God in our lives. Baptism sort of acknowledges that we're seeking Him. And more importantly, that Jesus, He has this water that's washing over us. That Jesus, He's found us all along, but here's a symbol of it. We don't know how it happens, or we don't know when it happens at times. But we know that this transformation does happen. This call is here, and that God, He's always looking for us. And after it happens, something is decidedly different. There's a man named George. He was raised in a Christian home, like many of us, raised in church. He was an only child, so he was the precious one to both sides of the family, given everything he wanted. But his mother, she wasn't around much. She had some health issues and some other things going on. So his grandmothers and his aunts really filled that motherly spot in his life. George, he grew up a regular kid, sort of shy, until he got in high school. When he came out and became a star athlete, the center of everybody's attention. That was his sort of a transforming moment for him. He went from a shy little kid to this personality, always talking to everybody, not shy at all. Sort of the life of the party. And he kept that personality continuing through life. You know, he went to the corporate world, became one of the top bosses at his work. He kept that fire going and developed his relationship with his sons. But he always went to church. But he wasn't there to worship God. That's what he thought he was doing, but he was worshiping his material things and worshiping that he was being recognized. He was the biggest giver. Everybody knew it. He sung the loudest. Everybody heard him. That's what he was there for. And he may not even realize it. But George, he goes on to say that he started living with a sort of hatred. He kept going down this path. Started caring more and more about his name, what he looked like, what he wore, what he drove. One day he woke up and he's like, man, something's missing. This doesn't feel right. This is not the way my life should be. Something went wrong. Well, after that, he turned his life around. He started going to church, and he still donated his money, still gave his tithe. He still sang. He still worshiped. But he did it for the right reasons. He did it to please God, to be in fellowship with Christ and everybody around him, not for himself. He started to become a little shy again. Didn't try to be the center of the party every day of his life. He never did that. He sort of went back to what he was as a child. Went back and remembered what it truly meant to be transformed. He ended up saying it's sort of like going back to being that little boy again. That's what leads us to the second point. Transformation is restoration. Zacchaeus came to Jesus like a child. Children climb trees, not Jewish men, especially not wealthy ones. Jesus, he called him out of that tree, called him out with a childlike faith, this childlike trust. That was the beginning of the transformation. Jesus, he calls Zacchaeus, was a call back to his childhood. His transformation was a restoration of Christ's image within him, of this image of God, as we see in Genesis. It's the same image we're all born with, but which sin and stains and taints and sort of warps. That original image, whose characteristics are generosity, grace, love, hope, all of the good things. This transformation of the person and the transformation of creation altogether, that is the purpose of restoring that which sin has destroyed, that sin has warped. That's the restoration of the image of God. That's your fellowship with Him for all the right reasons. Today, salvation has come to this house, says Jesus. He wasn't speaking just to change the condition of the man's soul, brought by this transforming moment within him. It was a little more than that. It was more comprehensive. The Greek word for being saved is also made well or healed, made whole. It refers not to just some private transaction between you and God, between God and the soul, but the healing of your whole person, every part of you. Those who experience this salvation, they're changed beings altogether. Their lives are radically transformed. Salvation has implications for every aspect of life. It's not something that just happens in church. It's at your work. It's with your family, your relationships, how people see you altogether. Even your spiritual practices are transformed. Everything becomes new again. Greed, it gives way to generosity. Self-centeredness yields to self-sacrifice. Caring only for oneself is transformed to caring that flows out to family, friends, neighbors, strangers in the street. The salvation Jesus offers, it radically alters every aspect of our lives. We're made brand new in Him. And that is the mission of Jesus. That is why He came. He came to seek and to save the lost, bring salvation, this healing, restoration of the whole self, this forgiveness of our whole bodies, this transformation to everybody, everybody on earth. He came to renew the image of God in us, to show us what the invisible God looks like, to show us what this love and acceptance, how it manifests in us, shows us of God's compassion and care, and that this transformation restores all of that inside of us. Have you experienced this salvation sometime in your life? Met this Jesus who stretches out His arms to embrace all of us, who gathers all the sinners together, the outcasts, the poor, the wealthy, the powerful, makes us all new people, who are transformed, who lives our lives to reflect His kindness, His generosity, and His love that He gave to us that we can show to others. How He's opened our eyes to see others as He sees them. Shown that no one is outside of His love, no matter what they've done in life, no matter how evil the things they've done. This is why Jesus was sent into the world, to seek out and save the lost. This is why we're sent into the world, to bring God's healing love, His salvation to others, and let them know, no matter how twisted or broken their lives have become, that there is love and salvation and healing in God. There is no greater mission than this, to become the vessels of God's transformation to every human being and to the whole of God's creation. So join the mission that Jesus has sent in front of us. There is so much transformation yet to be done in us and in all of those around us, in the world altogether. And we believe that this transformation is entirely possible. So let's get started in the world. Go pray with me. Lord, thank You again for this beautiful day You've given us. And Lord, thank You for transforming us and showing us what this transformation looks like in others so we can see it in ourselves. And Lord, thank You for giving us these stories to learn about You, to learn about these transformations of those who we think can't be transformed. And Lord, give us the strength and the courage and faith in You to go out into the world and continue this mission. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.